Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. On the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This program, Midwest Beat, is all about music and the people who make it. I'm your host, Tom Lounges, and tonight my musical guest is Dar Williams. Dar is a singer-songwriter raised in New York State and forged by the vibrant and eclectic mid-90s Boston scene. She has had over 25 years of success since the release of her debut album, The Honesty Room. Right now, she's touring. I believe she's touring. We'll find out. I know she's just released her 12th studio album called I'll Meet You Here. Well, we'll get a chance to meet her momentarily. You see, she's the guest for the next hour. Stay with us. Hey, everybody, Tom Lounges here with another edition of Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. Today, my guest is Dar Williams. Dar has been a singer-songwriter for 25, 26 years now. She started out in New York State and found her muse, found her groove in the mid-90s Boston scene. She's been influenced by all sorts of different styles of music, from Berkeley jazz to alt rockers to folk artists. In fact, one of her first tours was with folk icon Joan Baez. She's been inspired by Patti Griffin, Melissa Ferrick, the Throwing Muses, and others. We're going to find out what makes this lady tick. We're going to hear songs from her brand new album, which is coming out October 1st. It's called I'll Meet You Here. It's her 12th studio album. And we'll be meeting her in just a few minutes. Dar Williams, that is. But first, let's play a tune from the new album. It's called You Give It All Away.
I see what you see, and I hope the world is watching. Oh, they're gonna love the way you say the things you do. They don't know what's in store, they never seen the likes of this before. And oh, you're gonna give it all away. I know how it feels when the day will give you nothing, but then you see the golden spark that's floating on the wind. The line becomes the verse, becomes the golden trees, the golden birds. And oh, you're gonna give it all away. Whoa. Going fast now, the silver hope kaleidoscope is spinning us away. But find the means and find the ends, find a reason, just pretend. Find a way to send the light you send. Just like salvation might depend upon the things you do, my lovely friend, and oh, you're gonna give it all away. Oh, you're gonna give it all away.
New music, Dar Williams. Her album comes out the 1st of October. It's just around the corner. It's called I'll Meet You Here. And that's one of my favorite tracks off this new album. I've been living with it the last day or so. You Give It All Away. And like I said, the name of the album is I'll Meet You Here. And right now we're going to meet Dar Williams. Dar, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi. I love this new record.
Thank you.
Now, as I understand it, this is somewhat of a COVID album. You had a good chunk of it, if not all of it, done in 2019, just about the time everything was going to hell. And obviously you didn't want to release it and tour behind it because we couldn't. And now it's out the beginning of next month. So what was the gist of the recording on this? Did you make this after we were in shutdown, or did you make this prior to it?
Oh, it was prior.
Okay, that's
actually
what I thought.
You know, 2019 was, you know, when the pandemic was just a gleam in our eyes. So no one saw that coming. So actually, we did a lot of the recording out of lockdown, and then I did some overdubs and stuff once the lockdown started, which was a delicate process.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been living with these songs and with this finished album now for over a year. Given the fact that you've had so much time to listen to it and sit with it and wonder about, you know, I wish I had more time maybe to tweak it. Or are you happy with exactly how it turned out? Would you have messed with it any more if you would have known we would have had a year to do so?
Yes and no. Actually, we did mess with it once we had a little extra time.
Okay.
And I was going to put an extra song on, and then we just decided to keep that the way it is and just, you know, I'll just come out with another album earlier. But, it was a time to tweak a little of this and that and actually change little tiny ands and is's to be that way about little words.
Okay. Now, listeners, you can keep up with Dar at darwilliams.com, and she also has a Facebook page. What is the best place for people to get to know you? Which place online?
They're all pretty good, but I would say Facebook is what I check in with every day.
Okay. All right. Now, this is your 12th studio album. Go back to the early days, 93, 94. And evaluate your evolution as a songwriter. Now, I know you do songwriting classes and seminars and podcasts and all that wonderful stuff to try to illuminate and inspire young talents today. So evaluate yourself, if you will, from an outsider perspective. Young Dar is sitting down to write the first few songs of the first album, and now you're here in your 12th album. How would you say the evolution process has fared for you?
You know, I'm embarrassed to say, I think I probably have the same toolkit, but I just identify it better. Like now that I'm teaching it, as you said, I can sort of say, okay, oh, this is the thing where I got this cool little thing in my head. And I'll just say, like, what is it? Is it a waltz? Is it happy? Is it sad? Is it, you know, with a bunch of major sevenths or is it minor? And, you know, like what might be going on here? And then I'll get in a little deeper and be like, who's talking and where is this coming from? And then I'll just keep on going from there. So basically, I just now understand that there's this kind of path that you go on where you can be very curious about what's happening. And that as you're curious and you're going down this path, these voices are going to come in and say things like, it's too short, it's too long, it sounds like a Beatles song, it sounds like somebody else's song. And, you know, what right have you to do this song? And you just have to push those aside and keep on being curious. But that's something that, you know, somebody had just broken up with me and I was just heartbroken and I was sitting on my, you know, futon in the middle of Western Massachusetts. But somehow I got that thing where it was like, just stay curious, stay with the song that you're writing, take it on its own terms and see where it goes and knock the other stuff out of the way, including, you know, being left for another woman.
Right.
And that's what I do still.
Okay. Now, it's funny you mentioned about sounds too much like a Beatles song. I think between Chuck Berry and the Beatles, I think everybody has borrowed freely from those two catalogs.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's also, you know, I called Joni Mitchell the Wagner of folk music because she brought this whole, like, chromatic scale. It's almost like she introduced watercolors, you know, or impressionism into music. So there's just this kind of more free-floating, beautiful way of writing songs. And that's hard to stay away from as well, as Joni Mitchell has pointed out.
Right.
She's like, why does everybody sound like me? So, you know, there's a lot to try to stay away from, and also lots to just make peace with, like, okay, you know, so it sounds like them, but I'll keep on writing.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that you do teach and you do lecture a lot on the art of songwriting. What are you finding is the, what questions do students throw at you that surprise you? What kind of enlightenment have the students given? Because I know a lot of teachers, and they always say, you know, sometimes I'm the teacher and sometimes they're the teachers. So have you found that to be the case with songwriting?
You know, I think that there's just this one thing that they come down to and I come down to. It's like they come in and they say, okay, here it is. And I just say, it's a song. You know, let's just start with the fact that you've written a song and go from there. And I think they're just so relieved to hear a person say, I'm going to take this on its own terms, that you know, it sort of, I don't know, clarifies something that humans really need when they're making art, you know, which is another person to say, I see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of sit side by side. I try to sit side by side with people. Like, I call it leading, not teaching. You know, like, I try to really kind of see what they're trying to do. And watching them really, you know, thrive with that kind of witness gives me a sense that I should, you know, be that way with myself. I should sit next to myself and do that. So that's really, there's kind of this overall kind of, let's see what happens. And then every once in a while they'll bring stuff from other retreats that, is really helpful. And I have been to other, like, I was teaching songwriting at Steve Earle's retreat, and he talked about nonverbal words like oohs and ahs and uhs and mms. And I thought, wow, they really do communicate like words. And so there's definitely stuff that I've picked up, that's really helped my songwriting.
Okay. Have you noticed a big difference between male and female songwriters? Because you do address women in music in some of your discussions.
No, there's no difference. There's, because it's still, no, you know what, it's much, I'm like, maybe. No, it's more like everybody's just different. You know, we get people from, who really love, like Dolly Parton. And mm-hmm. and you'll hear that kind of influence. And there's this thing that I call the voice of the song. You know, is it a happy voice? Is it a stream of consciousness voice and stuff? So depending on what people love and kind of where they're coming from, you know, I'll hear an influence of the Indigo Girls or Dolly or, you know, James McMurtry or something like that. But it's very individual, and I wouldn't put it in the male-female categories.
Okay, fair enough. Who is perhaps, and this is a really broad question, but who would you say is your personal favorite songwriter? If you sit down and say, gosh, there's so many great people out there. There's the Bob Dylans and the Joni Mitchells and the Graham Nashes and, you know, so forth. Is there a top three that you say, okay, these are some, you know, iconic songwriters that really get it? They really hit the mark all the time.
I think, Stevie Wonder, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, okay. I would say. And you know, I'm going to add an honorary fourth just because, you know, there's been so much kind of weird press around him. Billy Joel is someone who has written so many unique songs in all these different genres. And so I kind of love all of those four because it just seems like they understand that, you know, this is a song and they are free to write a song. Actually, Paul Simon is the same way. Like, they have this freedom to enter in this completely imaginary world and they make the rules. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like you hear that freedom of you know, music and lyrics in those writers, that they know how to push those push those negative voices out of the way and not write something that they think somebody wants to hear, but really what they are curious about and following. And I hear that passion. I'll say that.
We hear a lot of songs from, especially the earlier days of music, earlier rock and roll and things that were similar. You know, it was a formula. The record label would say, hey, that was a great hit. Write another three like it. You know, and you just mentioned two that broke those boundaries. Billy Joel and Paul Simon, especially, they have written in so many styles and textures. How do you not get complacent as a songwriter? How do you say, gosh, that was a great song? We could do something like that again. Do you find yourself falling back to that comfort zone? And if so, how do you break out of it? Because as a journalist, I sometimes will sit at a blank page writing an article, and I'll say, yeah, I could kind of take that beginning I took, you know, from this article last year and twist it up a little bit, and it'll sound great. And I'll be done, and I can go out and have a beer with my friends. You know, get it out of the way kind of thing. How do you break that pattern and not allow yourself to fall complacent?
I think it's different. I know what you're talking about, because there's other stuff that I've worked on. And like with teaching, you know, it's like you just want to bring in what you've done before and work off of the thing that you know, and then, you know, see what grows around it. But it's almost like writing a song is like there's this big field and lightning strikes over there, and then lightning strikes over there, and in another place, and it illuminates something different. And if you don't start with the lightning strike of, ooh, that's an interesting thing, it just gets so boring. It just doesn't, it dies and doesn't have any life. So you can't, it's not like I put something in a bottle and I can open up that bottle again. And I don't know other songwriters who can either. I think that they can only write songs when that kind of thing strikes them, and then they build around it. And that's why I love Billy Joel, Paul Simon, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell. Like they all have that that thing where you feel like something struck them and they followed it, even though it wasn't the genre that people expected of them, Stevie Wonder's song "Don't You Worry About a Thing," it goes I can't even do it, like there's this vocal part that he does that's just so cool and interesting and nothing that you ever heard before. So I think the songwriting lends itself to being struck by something as opposed to wanting to do something for the sake of, you know, continuity.
Okay, let's play another song off the new record. Let's pick one that was a song that maybe came out of nowhere, that was a lightning strike, that, you know, you woke up in the middle of the night and says, I got an idea, or you got up in the morning with your orange juice and said, I got an idea. What was the one on here? Maybe there were more, but let's pick one that kind of exemplifies that.
Well, you know, it's funny. There's the thing that I woke up from a dream that went, because if I'm ever going to make it, then I got to say. And I'm like, oh, got to say what? If I'm ever going to make it, what am I going to? And it started as a breakup song, and it started as all these things. And then I just thought, I can save the world. The person saying I can save the world today and every day. And I thought, what is that? You know, mm-hmm. Do they think they're a superhero? You know, and then I thought, no, I think that that's actually been sort of the thing that saves me, this idea that I can participate. You know, every time you hear all this bad news, you're like, well, but I'm participating in the good news, you know, and especially with the climate crisis. And so I was like, whoa, okay. And yeah, I think I had to push away the sort of the voices in my head that said that was really saccharine. I was like, well, it's true. You know, it's just honest for me to say that this is the way I go about my day. You know, I hear all this stuff and I think, well, I recycled a can. and then I also talk to a lot of scientists and climate scientists and people who, you know, actually wake up in the morning and really invest themselves in this. And I can say that they do save the world today and every day, and that there's a lot of energy in the hope that I have in them, even if it's not in myself. So I wrote that song today and every day, putting aside the fact that it sounds almost like the Muppets could have, you know, written it.
Well, let's play that, because that is a standout track on this record. And again, it comes out October 1st, and it's on a brand new label. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But this is Dar Williams and New Music. We'll be back with Dar after this.
Hey there, polar bear is quite a mess we found. Life is one heavy trip, our paws are sinking in the ground. I see you out lumbering at the break of dawn. How can we survive and save the day before the day is gone? Well, I know I'm gonna find a way. I know I'm gonna light the way. Cause if I'm ever gonna make it, then I gotta say, I can't save the world today and every day. Young blood coming up and coming from behind. Got the force to change the world, and it's your mind. Your big plans are shining like the bright rays of the sun. We can't be done when all I see is that you just begun. Well, I know you're gonna find a way. I know you're gonna light the way. So if we're ever gonna make it, then you gotta say, I can't save the world. Man, there is no break or breather. There's no time for this smug frustration. I say, everyone, everyone's a power station. Mm-hmm. And we'll light the way. But we gotta say, we can't save the world a little every day. Is true. There are so many, many, many things that we can do. If we don't go and lay it on the line, what will we tell tomorrow when tomorrow says we have this time? Well, I know we're gonna find a way. I know we're gonna light the way. And I know we're gonna.
Today and every day, music to live by, music to inspire. Music from Dar Williams off her new album, I'll Meet You Here, which is out October 1st of, beginning of next month, just a couple, week and a half away, something like that. You're listening to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. This is a program all about music and the people who make it. And Dar Williams has been making music for over a quarter century now, since roaring out of the Boston scene, where you were influenced by so many different textures and styles and genres of music. How did you find your voice, Dar?
My dad had all this folk rock music, you know, and it was alphabetized. I remember, so it was like there was a lot of C and C's and D's. We had the Beatles and Jim Croce, the Byrds, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Joan Baez, Judy Collins. So, and the thing that they all had in common was that they believed, you know, you sense that they believed that it was so culturally important, you know, that these songs were really so heavy and taking on these social issues. And, you know, these artists who made a lot of money were walking around in jeans, you know, and trying to look like everybody else. And so I think, and my parents loved them. And I think it was the best of my family that listened to that music together. So, you know, that was in my heart. And then, I worked at an opera company in Boston, and thought that maybe I wanted to direct opera or be involved with opera, but really I just missed singing. So that was a surprise, and I went to a vocal, a voice teacher who knew all of these open mic scenes from 20 years before, but they were still around, like the Naked City Coffee House and stuff. So, you know, I pulled out my guitar and started going to these open mics, and there was that wheel from the 60s that had turned and was really coming back around in the 90s, and of all these singer-songwriters like Greg Brown and you know, and even the commercial world like Tracy Chapman and Suzanne Vega and the Indigo Girls. So, you know, it was suddenly this thing had come back where there was this, a world of acoustic music where people were writing about stuff that was important to them and had its audience and a whole coffee house scene. So I was very lucky I got to step into it.
One of the things, it's interesting you talked about that scene, because I recently did something here on radio to celebrate the anniversary of the No Nukes concert. And I know you're very environmentalistic and you care about Mother Earth, and so many musicians do. And, you know, I remember growing up in that era and people saying, oh, it's a bunch of hippies singing. No one's going to listen. It's not going to make any difference. But then you look at it, and the message was no nukes, and plutonium is forever, and power, and John Hall, and Jackson Brown. Mm-hmm. All these guys were writing these amazing songs. And look where we are at now, 42 years later. We have electric cars. You drive down the highway, you see fields full of windmills. So I think the naysayers can say what they want, but I think that had a big difference. And I do believe that music can make a difference. And your writing today is similar in spirit, I think. And a lot of the younger artists that are coming up the ranks that are into the folka / Americana sound also have those same messages. Do you think... do you feel the same way? Do you feel that the music is really helping to propel some of these changes in our society?
Yes. And I think music just is what holds stuff together. And I learned this word because I was teaching about music from the 60s and 70s. And there's a word called homology. And homology is like people who aren't like you, but you have certain things in common. And therefore, you can kind of be a block of people who, you know, like you listen to the same music, you wear the same patchouli, you know, you have similar, you read similar books, you share a similar poetry. And so when the moment comes when somebody says, we're going to do this action together in this democracy where we're going to go and really say, like, this is our voice here, you have this block of people you can join together with as a voice, as a consumer block, or as a protest block, or as a letter-writing block. And so those blocks or those homologies really count. Like, you know, you think about a kid who was living in the South and or, you know, a person who was, you know, gay or really felt like, you know, were trans, and they were off in somewhere in some city, and they heard this song on the radio that was like a beacon, and they found other listeners of that music, and they found the artists, and they went to those concerts. You know, that's a real magnet for people to find one another and to let the poetry into their hearts and to, you know, find the people who are kindred spirits. So it's real. And I think in the 60s, which was breaking apart from the 50s so radically, you know, like my son, you know, sings Neil Young songs to himself while he's doing his calculus homework. Like, you didn't have that between the 50s and the 60s. Like, right. The 60s didn't listen to, you know, we all listen to the same stuff now, but the 60s was kind of like kids parenting each other, you know, really kind of creating a new authority for one another. And music was a big part of that. Like, Peter Yarrow told me that people used to call him the rabbi, even though he was 25 years old, because he was the new rabbi. He was the new voice of authority, you know, through this music. So I think there's a lot of gravitas there. I think it's very magnetic and very important.
Does your son follow your footsteps? Has he got the musical DNA?
Yeah, he's musical. It's, you know... He just comes up with a lot of ideas about, you know, things that can be done in the world. So he's just creative in different ways. He's musical, but he really he loves music, but he loves to kind of figure out like how we can have affordable housing for everybody.
Oh wow!
And I love that about him. It's almost like he's writing songs, but it's not songs. He's kind of weaving together how we can have a future, which I think a lot of kids are doing right now.
Right, right. One more songwriting question here, and that is your latest book, Writing a Song That Matters. You've been writing a number of books, actually, but that one is specifically on songs. What is it? Let's just play with the title, Writing a Song That Matters. What makes a song matter? And who does it matter to, the audience or the songwriter?
Well, I think the subtitle is going to be To You and Who Knows. You start with something that's interesting to you, mm-hmm. and you follow it with some assumption that it's going to matter to somebody if it matters to you, but you don't know. And, you know, so for instance, I wrote a song called When I Was a Boy, and I thought, the feminists are going to be mad because why don't I write a song called When I Was Like a Boy, you know, or When I Was a Girl Who Did Things the Boys Do. And I thought, and nobody's going to get it. And, you know, this was very unique. I just kind of had this boy feeling when I was a teenager and when I was young, and there was a lot of freedom. And I think that a lot of boys had a real girl feeling, too, mm-hmm. that they feel like they've lost. And I'm going to put that in the song. You know, I just thought, no one's going to get this. Everybody got it. It mattered to me. But then it mattered, you know, it mattered to my career. My whole career came out of that. People saying, like men coming up to me and being like, yes, I was a girl. Like, I definitely felt that. Sometimes when you just follow something on your own terms, like I was like, this isn't a feminist song. This is a gender song, which turned out to be, you know, what the world was kind of looking at. Like, how do we take apart all of this male-female definition stuff? So a song that matters to you, if we can, like when I'm leading the retreats, like if we can get to what matters to people and let them write the song that really floats their boat, the chances are that's going to it's going to go someplace. It will have an audience. But I've told people, you know, if your father was a podiatrist and you write songs about feet, and they're really well crafted and they're really wonderful, and some people can really deal with them, you know, a song about bunions, you can be a great artist and you probably won't have a great big audience for that. But if that matters to you, that will help you, you know, keep a record of your life and make your life more meaningful.
That sounds like a great exercise for a songwriting class. Take some random topic that you would never think would be a song and write a song about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's lots of exercises that are really fun. And we have prompts, you know, just because what I've said is, if somebody says to you, think about a key, you think about a key. And mm-hmm. now I say, now think about a key poetically. It's a different feeling. It's a different approach. And we put ourselves in these situations where you just say, look at this ordinary thing. Okay, now look at it poetically. And where does it go, you know, when a key is not just a key? A river is not just a river. And it's amazing how people kind of build metaphoric worlds about, you know, things that speak to their whole interior lives. With just that, you know, shift your thinking from objective to subjective.
Okay. One of the songs on here that stood out to me, too, is Let the Wind Blow. I'd like to play that one. Now, that's a song that I get all kinds of visuals in my head. To me, a great song is where I can hear it and I see the pictures in my mind's eye, and it can be interpreted in different ways. We're going to listen to that and let people listen and see what comes up in their head. And I'd like you then, after, to tell us a little bit about what was going through your head when you wrote it.
Okay.
All right, let's do that. This is Let the Wind Blow. Again, this is brand new music from Dar Williams. It's coming out on October 1st, so it's just around the corner on a brand new label through BMG. Let's listen.
Oh, the stories we could tell my adventurous friend. And the perils that we faced on our journey homeward, we were sailing in the open, and the storm was coming fast. So we jumped up to our posts, but the rudder split in half. So here comes the wave, came crashing on the deck, twisted up the sail, but then we saw the land. Jumped into the sea, let the wind blow, rescued in each other's arms. We watched the sun rise up again. So we marched into the day, our machetes lifted high, blazing through the thorny vines on our journey homeward. We heard the distant cry, and we saw the cloud of smoke, but by then it was too late, we couldn't turn around. So here comes the fire, we were coughing as we ran, trees fell in the path, but then we saw the rocks, and we climbed till we were free. Let the wind blow, you pull me up into your arms. Watch the sun rise up again. As we scaled the deep crevasse, how we marveled at our fortunes and the genius of our ways. I'm sorry for the day we couldn't venture on. It's what I should have guessed. There was never any. Will they find the splintered boat, the trunk of letters in the sand, and a flag upon the hill beyond the blackened forest? Down a winding garden path, there's a creaky little house. I'll be writing at my desk, looking out upon my town.
Hands down, I think, right down my very favorite track off of this amazing new album from Dar Williams, I'll Meet You Here, is the album that's Let the Wind Blow. And if you listen to those lyrics, you can picture all sorts of things. Lines like machetes raised up high. I mean, wow, pretty visual stuff. Now, Dar is with us here as my guest on Midwest Beat. And Dar, my interpretation of this, and I may be way off course, as I listen to that, I'm picturing a tumultuous relationship, sometimes violent, maybe sometimes wonderful, ups and downs. The machetes raised up high. It gives me a visual that this is not a good relationship moment. And at the end, you're talking about a flag on a hill, a blackened forest. Maybe it's come to the end, and at the end, you're liberated and you're free of whatever this relationship was. Now, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this or what, but that's what I got out of the song. And what was going through your mind when you wrote this?
I think that worked, actually. For me, the machetes lifted high are, you know, side by side, just kind of whacking through the forest. And this idea that you have these two adventurers, which are, you know, people in a relationship, and they are, you know, they defy death at every turn, and then there's this one moment that they can't defy on their way home, you know, that there's this one thing they can't defy on their journey, which is that there's no home, like that the relationship isn't supposed to happen, that it's just doomed.
Right.
So it's not And so the person basically says, okay, now I'm remembering all of this and all of these great adventures that we had and not regretting all of those adventures, because that's love. And maybe somebody else has a love that will bring them home, as opposed to just being sort of, you know, trying to get somewhere that it never, where it never quite arrived. And I just thought, I was, there's this book called The Lost City of Z by David Graham. And it's all about these adventurers of in the Amazon. And I just love that faith that these people had with their pith helmets and their machetes and their heavy canvas tents with the metal grommets. I mean, think about how much easier it is mm-hmm. now. And yet they had this faith, you know, with all of those mosquitoes and snakes and everything, that they were going to just make this grand discovery. And I think that's what we have in our hearts with love. You know, we think we're going to make a grand discovery. And so here we are, you know, out adventuring. And there's this terrible discovery, which is that we're not really looking for anything that can be found.
Right.
So it's... that for me was the language that suited that kind of hope that we have in love.
Side by side, going through life together, looking for like King Solomon's mines, only to never find it. And I love the closing, though, because you leave us with hope, and you're talking about the sun is going to rise. So
yeah.
It didn't work, but they're okay.
Yeah, and I have my home, and my home is okay. And I have no, you know, it's nice to sit. I mean, I learned this in the pandemic. It's nice to sit in one's house and reflect on one's adventures, you know, and not regret, even when they were kind of iffy and weird, you know, like if you did a lot of clubbing back in the day.
Right.
You know, it's if you survive that, it's nice to sit in your little house and look out your window and remember, you know, your adventures and your death-defying exploits. So there's that, too, in the narrator.
Kind of looking back at the glory days a bit.
Yeah.
One of the things that's unique is you've been around the block, as we mentioned. You have written numerous songs, released numerous albums for a variety of labels. Razor and Tie, in particular, you did quite a few for. But you're with a new label now. You're BMG, Bertelsmann Group, is huge. I mean, they're huge. And you're with one of their brand new imprints, one of the first artists signed to Renew Records. How did you finagle that? What attracted you to them and them to you?
You know, I didn't really know until after at some point that this was really my major label debut. And there was a whole thing in the 90s about not being with a major and being with an indie. And that
right.
was where I belonged for 20 years, actually, with Razor and Tie. I have this great manager who's I worked with on and off for years and then officially started working with. And she said, you know, you have this great publishing deal with BMG, with these people that you keep on talking about that you love, David and, you know, that and they're all out in LA, and I'm going to come out to LA and let's just meet and talk about, you know, the relationship you have with the publishing contract. And that was when I think David was excited. Hirschland was excited that they were really getting going with Renew. They had just signed Wilco. And he said, you know, I mean, this would be, I've been working with Dar for 20 years and, you know, what do you think? And it was just a very organic moment. I mean, these are people that I really like and trust, all of whom I've worked with, some of whom were at Razor and Tie and were now at Renew. So it was kind of like going with old home week. And I'm very lucky. I mean, I really love working with them, and I feel very fortunate to have a label, because it's a little bit, you know, it's a very new world they have to navigate.
Right. Now, BMG is huge in their distribution and publishing. Renew Records is strictly for Americana folk artists, basically, correct?
Yeah, I would say that. Americana, I'm not sure Wilco would be called folk, but...
Well, they're definitely Americana. They're Chicago, and we used to call them cowpunk or something like that back
exactly.
in the day.
Yeah, I would definitely put the Americana on them, for sure, yeah.
Okay. So you're getting the benefits of a major label with the freedom that you get with an indie, correct?
Yes, you are right. And that's always been a great... Razor and Tie got pretty big while I was there, but I always had freedom with both labels. I think I do my best to come through on that.
Right.
to not veg too much and to be a valuable, you know, Razor and Tie said, we'll work hard and you'll work hard. Let's work hard for each other and, you know, side by side. And Renew basically said the same thing. You know, you're going to get out there and tour, Dar, and you're going to get out there and do what you do. And we'll do our best as well.
That said, now that the album is out, will be out in a few weeks. I'm assuming you're already working some stuff at radio. What songs are you pushing right now? What songs is the media gravitating towards?
Well, it's funny because there's singles that have come out. So the first one was "You Give It All Away," and then the next one was "Today and Every Day," and then a song called "Time Be My Friend" has just come out. So there's been a slow release, and then there's a very, very ballady song that I wrote that was very much based on a book that I wrote called "What I Found in a Thousand Towns," which is nonfiction. It's like my sort of take on urban planning. And, you know, my take on the fact that towns that kind of embrace and understand that change is there, you know, thrive. I wrote a song called "Little Town," and it's a weird song because, you know, a lot of times you have songs about people, you know, being very xenophobic, and other songs are about people being very open to change and loving the world. And this is kind of about a person transitioning from one viewpoint to another. It was just something I see all the time in my travels and as I was writing that book. So people have been happy to see, you know, a song that really charts that transformation of a person from having really closed fists to open palms. Because I think we give up on ourselves really fast. There are lots of stories about people surprising themselves about how open they can be to the way the world is going.
Will you be touring?
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of, you know, there will be a lot of protocols in place, and people have been, you know, kind of holding off. The ticket sales are just starting to pick up now.
Okay.
As people are seeing that you can do it safely, they are doing it.
I was just reading in Billboard a couple of weeks ago how the George Strait concert had sold out in a matter of 2 days or something, and that once the concert happened, that was back in May, the concert happened in August, and like 20% of the tickets were no-shows, and that they were saying everyone's freaking because if people bought tickets and don't come, that means they're probably not going to buy tickets in the future. And I was just wondering if, you know, if you're playing small rooms, big rooms, looking more for outdoor, since you're able to travel, you could go to warmer weather climates where people are a little more confident. What's the game plan? Have you started booking yet?
Yeah, all inside, all cold weather. but yeah, we'll see. We're actually not going to be in Texas or Florida or Alabama or Mississippi or even Tennessee for this. That's just sort of coincidentally what happened. And it's indoors. And we are, we're definitely seeing people, you know, we're kind of on a boat on the water. That's
kind of like your album cover.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
So, and we knew, but we're doing smaller. We from the start we're going into smaller places than usual to accommodate that reticence. That's cool. But I just did a taping of Mountain Stage, and the audience had masks on, and the people had masks on except when they were on the stage itself. And you know, if people are with the program, it really can work.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to another song here before we say goodbye. I just want to find out a little bit more about the game plan from moving forward. Your last album, Emerald, was in 2015, I think, 16.
Right.
2021 now. It's been a while. Now, normally, if you look back at your track record, you were writing an album and releasing an album about every year to 3 years maximum. Why the gap? Was it because of the teaching?
It was because of the book. It was because of the book, What I Found in a Thousand Towns. I was curious to know if I could combine it with songwriting, and I couldn't. and it was like interviews and a lot of extrapolation and editing and stuff, and took a long time. So I got the contract around 2015, and then it came out late 2017. And then the plan was, you know, sort of mid-2020, we would put out the album, and we had to delay a year. So if you look at the book like another album, it kind of tracks
makes
with
sense.
My timeline. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have time. We just have a few minutes left. We have time for one more song, and I'm torn because I love Time Be My Friend, and I know that was the last one you did for the album, but you've intrigued me with Little Town and the story behind that. And then the last song, You're Aging Well, is actually quite an old song, and that was one that you did with Joan Baez. This is a new version. What do you want to play? We got time for one.
You know what? If it's not too slow for your, I don't know if you have a rock and roll crowd.
It's NPR, dear. We have every crowd.
All right. You know what? Since Time Be My Friend is sort of out there as a single, maybe it'd be more fun to do Little Town, because you'll be probably doing a world premiere of that one.
Okay, very good. Well, we're going to debut it worldwide for you, ladies and gentlemen. This is for all those folks that live in a little town, and we have a lot of them here in Indiana and Chicagoland. So this is Dar Williams. This is new music, and the album comes out again, I want to remind you, on October 1st. That's just a few days away. It's on the BMG-distributed Americana label Renew Records, which is renewing my faith in major labels by picking up an artist like Dar. And you can keep up with her at Dar Williams on Facebook and darwilliams.com. Dar, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you.
All right. You be safe, and we'll see you when you get to Chicagoland.
Exactly. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
The one thing you should know, you gotta take it slow. What they call the shifting of the sands, I see is your demands. When you change, you can't ignore what things are and were before. My family has been here for generations, and now I have two children of my own. And I knew that I would stay here, always knew I'd stay here. It's not a new world that you found, it's just a little town. Everybody knows who was born and raised here. The mayor is my friend. I've known him all my life. Each year he and I plan the 4th of July. So why'd he ask you to? You, especially you. He said this town, for all its pride, it's been dying from inside. And we've got to find our way. We'll start with Independence Day. And as the fireworks came up above the mountain, I saw you put your hand up to your heart. And I saw the mayor watching, knew my kids were watching. Hope that I would come around. Big parade, little town. Now the months come after months, and every 4th of July, we help our children putting all the flags on the line. Up and down the main street, every country that we're from, like the mayor always wanted. He's been gone for 7 years now. It's quiet by the lake, walking with our dogs. How long has it been? Oh, it's been a long time now. We talk about this town, you're the mayor of it now. They're all moving here, everyone comes here. We'd like to say we don't get out that much, 'cause the whole world comes to us. We can't blame them now, we say. We are just a little great.